Ladies and gentlemen, this is Wednesday, February the 6th, 1974, and Mr. Peter Moran and I am Jack Coleman, are at the home of Mr. Fred Apperly in the village of Cookstown. We are here to interview Mr. Apperly and tape his comments on the history of his family, the Cookstown area, his municipal career, and highlights, and other important phases in his life. This tape, if it turns out well, will be preserved for all times at the county archives. We're very pleased to have this opportunity to interview Mr. Apperly, and I am particularly pleased to be a part of this interview, as our families have had much in common over the years. My mother, who was Beatrice Maud Campbell Graham, a daughter of John and Mary Graham of Clover Hill, was born, I believe, the same year as Mr. Apperly, and I believe they started to school together at Ross's school. Mr. Apperly will no doubt correct me if this is not so. This is the first of a series of interviews we intend to do of outstanding residents of our county who have contributed much to the history of this great county of Simcoe and their local community. It is with a great deal of pleasure I introduce Mr. W.A. Apperly, and we will be assisting Mr. Apperly by asking him leading questions, covering himself in the community, and perhaps some of the questions on current affairs before this interview is completed. Mr. Apperly, we would like you to be very modest with your answers because we intend to maintain and keep this tape so that in years to come it will be available for any person doing research of the Apperly family or the area, the Cookstown area. Now, I said a few minutes ago that you were born in the same year as my mother, and she was born in 1881. I have been told you were born in 1880.
That's correct.
And your birthday is in December, I believe. Is it the 13th?
12th day of December.
12th day of December, 1880. 80. Well, that makes you a young fella. What was your father and mother's name?
My father was Francis Hutton Apperly. My mother was Mary Elizabeth Barman.
And where were they born?
My mother was born at Dunedin, Lotosaga Township. My father was born at Maple, I believe.
And when did they move to Cookstown, and where did they move to?
They moved to the Patterson Farm, John Patterson Farm, in the fall of 82, I believe.
The John Patterson Farm, what was that in Tecumseh?
It's out there.
That's at the on the highway 89 now.
Yeah. No. Down where I sold out.
On the farm that you left.
Concession 14, lot 21.
Lot 21, concession 14,
that's
Tecumseh.
Right. That's right.
And then they moved to?
My father and mother moved to Clover Hill then for a term of years before they died.
Do you know how Clover Hill got its name?
I just took it because it was a wonderful place for clover.
Was there ever a post office at Clover Hill?
Yes. T.M. Banting was postmaster there for a time.
I happened to notice this in the Barry paper, and Peter, maybe you saw this too, where they were seeking information as to whether there were post offices at several of the places in the county that some of them were unknown to me.
Yes.
And Clover Hill was amongst those named.
Clover Hill had a store, a post office, several dwelling houses, a woodworker's shop, a hotel, and a blacksmith shop.
Oh, that's very interesting. What was, how many brothers and sisters did you have, Fred?
Two brothers and three sisters. Six of us in the family.
And when were you married, and what was your wife's name?
Well, I was married in 1911. My wife was Annie Matilda Cooper.
Yes. And you had one daughter?
One daughter.
Helen. Who's living here in Cookstown with you.
That's correct.
One thing I missed asking you, Fred, and that was you're known as W.A. Fred Apperley. What does W.A. stand for?
Alfred. I get Fred out of Alfred.
Yeah, what's the W for?
William.
William Alfred Apperley.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit, if we can, Fred, about the history of the area, and particularly the village of Cookstown. I believe it had two names previous to being Cookstown. It was called, I think, Dixon's Corners at one time, and then Perry's Corners.
That's correct.
And then became Cookstown, and was named after Major Cook. Is that correct?
He was known in our time as Major Cook. His Christian name was Christopher Cook.
Yes.
And just while we're on that, I might say that, according to my information, and I'm pretty sure it's correct, Christopher Cook was the only deputy reeve in the history of Simcoe County that ever got to be warden.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, what about Dr. Banning?
Well, that's years and years after.
Afterwards.
Yes.
But he was but Christopher Cook was a deputy.
A deputy. Reeve.
Yes. I mean, that doesn't, with the experience you've had, doesn't, and I've had, doesn't happen very often, does
well,
it?
Well, he was warden when I was 80, when I was born in the 80.
In 80.
So, I can't remember it myself, but no. I have good authority from a real municipal student that was correct.
Would he be then the deputy reeve of Tecumseh?
Yeah. See, that corner of Cookstown's built on the northeast corner of Tecumseh.
Right.
And Cookstown was named after Christopher Cook, as I understand it.
And did he live in the house that we know as the Ledley?
No.
Farm
he
house?
Had a little frame house, which was put to the back of the new house as a summer kitchen.
And well, who did he ever own that, or did he build the house on the Ledley farm?
Yeah.
He built that house.
Yes. You mean the later house?
Yes, the big brick house, yeah. which is an apartment now.
That's correct.
Well, so we can get some history of the village of Cookstown, let's begin at the United Church on the west and south of
Queen Street.
Of Queen Street, and come up the street, and was the post office there next to Herb Jebb's? Was that always the post office?
In my time. But before we get to that, the house which is now the United Church parsonage, right on the corner,
yes,
was a real conglomeration of frame buildings all in one. It was called P.H. Stewart Block.
P.H. Stewart Block.
Yeah. And there was a, in my times, far back as I can remember, the undertaker and furniture dealer had one part of it. The Cook's Non-Advocate, with people of Naaman Morrison publishing it, had another part. And at one time, Herb Duffy married Emma Coleman, the postmaster's daughter. They had a big shop and ice cream parlor.
Who was the undertaker then?
A man named Walker.
Of Walker?
Yes.
Is there anything more you want to say about that?
I believe the top story was used for, I think possibly, a tailor and dressmaker's shop, among other things. It was always in use, though all those apartments upstairs were used for some kind of...
And was that torn down to build the parsonage?
Yes.
Well, then the house that the post office was a part of, was that a house or was that a post office?
That was a
house. As I know it.
That was a house.
That was a house.
Yeah, you mean next to the...
Yes, yeah. Next to the parsonage.
Yeah.
That was just a house.
That was a house.
Well, coming north, or to the next building, was, as I remembered, was Herb Jebb's house, and he had a cartage business there. Was that...
Well, when I can first remember, a widow woman, Mrs. Gein, had a bookstore there.
Mrs. Gein?
Yes.
I'm hearing things I never heard before, Fred, about Cookstown. And then, did the doctor always live in the next...
No. Harry Rankin built that house. I believe the time he was married.
This is the house that Dr. McFarlane is living in now. And Harry Rankin built that house.
Yes.
And then the next house, as I remember, belonged to Bill Corbett.
No, it belonged to Charlie Hamilton.
Charlie Hamilton.
He was a harness maker.
And was that a harness shop?
He had a harness shop right directly east of it on the same lot.
And there was a store next to it?
No, there was another building in between where the Joe Banning sold machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the drugstore.
Where now was the drugstore? Where the store is sits
where the store
sits now? Was Robinson's name that kept the hardware shop there?
Well, he kept
Frank Robinson.
Yeah, but he kept the... Oh yes, that's right. That was John King had a.
That was John King.
Yes, had a
tinsmith shop
business.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, as I remember, mind you, I'm speaking of about 19, I'm talking about 19, the 1920s. Dr. Jim Miller had a little shop between that store and Mrs. Gollop's house. He had his dentist's shop there.
Do you know that I've got this all wrong? Right next to Harry Rankin's house.
House. That's the Dr. McFarlane house.
How was it? There's a vacant lot there.
There's a vacant lot, that's right.
Well, then Charlie Hamilton.
Yes.
And his harness shop, a small little shop.
Yes.
Well, then Joe Banting had a machine, a building there for a machine agency.
Yes.
How is this machinery there?
Yes.
Well, then we come to Mrs. Gollop's.
And then Mrs. Gollop's house.
Yeah.
And then Mrs. Gollop's store. But then that's where the old Queen's Hotel was, wasn't it?
No.
Wasn't?
No.
Okay. Well, Alec Arnold, Alec McCullough was in there someplace too, wasn't he?
He was in Joe Banning's old
He was in Joel. He was in, and is that where the municipal office is now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, then that store, as far back as I can remember, John S. Willoughby sold groceries.
Oh, yes.
And Dr. McKay had his brother set up a drugstore in the west.
In the west part.
Yeah.
And later on, there was a barber shop in that west part.
For a time.
For a time, in that same store, wasn't it?
Yes. Tom Hattle.
Tom Hattle, right. Now, was the Willoughbys any relations to the Dinwiddies?
John S. Willoughby's wife was a Dinwiddie.
Was a Dinwiddie. I thought there was some connection between those two. Well, then going on from the store, and then of course maybe we're taking a little time here, Peter, but I think it's worthwhile because we're getting a lot of information on Cookstown that's going to be very valuable. Then we had the hotel. That was the Ledley Hotel, was it? The Queen's Hotel.
It was Jim Colder's Hotel.
Jim Colder's Hotel.
Yes.
And that was between the... Between...
It's almost where the bank sits now.
We were talking about the hotel. Fred, is this the hotel that was operated by the Ledleys at one time?
At one time, yes. Later in life.
Later. After the Colders.
After Colder.
Colder was...
After Kaiser, I guess. No, I'm not sure about that. They operated for a time anyway.
Well, this was Harry Ledley's father and mother.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Now, the bank was built then at a later date, much later than these buildings we're talking about. I can remember it in about 1922 or 1920. So it must have been built a little bit before that. The bank, and it was the Royal Bank, and Mr. McMillan was the manager when I remember it.
Yeah.
But you tell me there was a manager before that.
I think the original manager was a man by the name of... I mentioned it just now.
Well, it doesn't matter. Mr. McMillan wasn't the first manager of the bank anyway.
I think it was just after the turn of the century when that
bank was built. Well, then we'll go on, and Alec Arnold then had the next property, and he had his machine shop at the back of the lot.
Back of the lot.
Right. And then we had a...
In the front was a store.
Yes.
Run by Josh McMahon. Dry goods store.
Is that the store that Harry Fisher operated?
Yes.
Next to that was Harry Fisher's, or the house was next to that, and then Harry Rangan built another house, didn't he? Didn't he build the McCouche house?
Yes.
And then...
That McCouche house was built out of a pump shop. It was run by Herb Barnes.
Well, that's very interesting. I never heard that before, because it's a good-looking house.
Yeah.
And then we have the Coase property, and I don't know whether they always owned that or not.
Jimmy Boynton, the barber, built that house, and he had a little building in between for the barber shop.
Oh, yes. And then we come to the corner, and we had the Monkman property.
That was run by J.G. Monkman.
J.G. Monkman.
Yes.
Now, was that Tom Monkman's father?
Tom Monkman's uncle.
Tom Monkman's uncle.
Yeah.
Because I saw a bill of sale the other day from J.G. Monkman, and I thought that was Tom Monkman's father and, of course, Louis's grandfather, but it was Tom Monkman's uncle.
Tom Monkman's uncle.
Well, on the opposite corner, then across the street from Monkman's, as I remember it, was the printing shop. What was on that corner, as you remember?
You mean to the east?
To the east, yes.
The man by the name of Tom Burns had a woodworking shop there.
On that corner.
On that corner.
And now let's go to the south. Was Tom Webb's blacksmith shop there then, Fred?
It was there. It was run by a man, Henry Dunning. Harry Dunning's father.
Harry Dunning's father.
Yes.
Well, there's nothing to the more to the south. Let's go east again and to W.J. Finley, who operated the shoe store.
That's right.
Is that... That's what you remember being there.
As far as I can remember.
And then the next place of business was Brawley's Big Shop.
Donald
This is before Brawley's took it over. Yes. There was another operator. Well, we'll next, if you think of it, you could just break in any time. Yeah. But we were talking before we started this tape about the barbershop, and you were telling me Jim Jeb operated the barbershop, which was the next building to Brawley's.
It had been, when I first remembered, a doctor's place.
Doctor's
Ronthwaite.
Dr. Ronthwaite.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that name.
Well, then there was a Dr. Brown, young man, only stayed a few years or so, maybe only a few months. Well, at one time, when Pugsley and Glass were in partnership, it was a butcher shop.
Oh.
And earlier than that, before the doctors, Jake Wilcox had a butcher shop there.
Well, that's really going back in the in the history, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what date would this be?
What date would this be, Fred? 1890?
In the 90s somewhere.
In the 90s somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, let's go across the street. There was, we could go on up the street. There was no more businesses, but we might mention the Presbyterian Church was on up the street. And at the top of the hill on the north side of the road was the Anglican, St. John's Anglican Church.
That's right.
And then coming back west now, we come down to the corner to the drugstore. What was on the corner where Jim Dawson and McKay had the drugstore?
When I can first remember, my uncle John Sommerfeld kept hotel there. It was a big frame building. He sold out to people from the name of Glassford. And they interned. That's the first place that Ludley's moved when they came from Minnesing, Henry Ludley and his family. They kept it for a time and it was burned down. I can remember the night of the fire. So then they sold it. Well, they held it for a number of years, but they moved on down to the Center Hotel where Chris Armstrong at the hotel, and they bought that out. And through time, William McKay, the druggist, bought the corner block and built its house and drugstore.
And he put that up.
Yes.
He came from Creemore, Creemore. Well, before we go on down the street, there's just one other thing, and that is that Klutz Blacksmith Shop always over on the east side of King Street?
As far as I can remember, a man of name up. Alfred Ayrist.
Had it before Charlie Clute.
Charlie Clute
took it on.
Yeah.
Well, then to come from west, now from the drugstore, as I remember, Tom McKnight had an office, a small building.
Yeah.
And then there was the Masonic Hall, and there was a shoe repair operated by Agnew, I can't think, John Agnew.
Well, that was the harness man.
That was the harness man.
Yeah. But I guess wasn't it the Masonic Hall that Tom Jebb had his furniture store and
yes.
undertaking part?
Yes. And then the next door to that would be next door to the building where you'll remember recently what did they call a fellow that had the shoe repair in there and then Mel McFadden had the printing press
in there too.
And then Charlie Watson's the undertaker's property, and that's an antique store now, I think.
Yeah.
Now, the next property was Harry Rankin's. What was that used for, as you remember it, Fred?
Well, before that, Tom Webb had put up a skating covered rink.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Right there.
Oh, yes.
And that was the rink.
That was the rink.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah.
This is between two buildings.
Between the Hopper store and the...
Yes, and then Dave Hopper had the general store there.
When I can first remember, a man by the name of Elliot, Thomas Elliot, had the store. Dragon store. John store.
Oh, yes. And then we have the residence of the Coast residence, and then the Coast store. Now, who...
Well, it was the Elliott residence.
Oh, I see. At one time.
Yeah.
And then the Coast store was...
First I can remember, Robert Joseph Coleman.
R.J.
R.J. Coleman had a grocery store there.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And then next to that was the... What, the Lewis? The whole...
Lewis Hotel.
Lewis Hotel.
It was Chris Armstrong's hotel.
Yes. And did the Ledleys have it at one time?
They moved from the burnt-out
place down to this hotel.
Yeah.
And then next to the hotel, Jeb, the jeweler? Did Tom Jebb operate next?
No.
Where was his shop?
There was a little shop in there. You ready? A man by the name of Eby, W.J. Eby, had a tailor shop in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, where was Tom Jebb's jewelry shop?
He didn't have it. You're thinking of...
T.A.C. Banting. Right.
He built that house and jeweler shop.
Right between the hotel the Cookstown Exchange used to be?
Yes.
The telephone exchange
yes.
was?
Yes.
Right there.
Right there.
And then next to that was the butcher shop that Pugsley operated, and...
Well, when I can first remember, that was before Bob Coleman moved up to the, what we knew lately as Coast Store. He had a little grocery store there.
There.
And Chris Willoughby was a boy who was clerking for him. Not Chris, but John S. Willoughby.
Oh, yeah, John S. Willoughby.
Yeah.
And he later took the store
across the
road. And then on the corner where Dunning's Garage was, what was that, as you remember?
The first I can remember, Harry Rankin sold machinery there. And that's the Harris Machinery, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
No, Cockshut Machinery.
Cockshut.
Yeah.
Now, there are no other businesses there, but, or were there?
On down to the west, there was a public weigh scale right in the ditch there. You know, people come in with a load of hay and drive in on this.
Drive in on...
That was operated by Henry Coleman, the postmaster.
Oh, yes.
And right directly from that, in a little shaggy building, a man by the name of Sam Hayes run a boot and shoe store. And then, just directly west of that, another little shack of a business, man by the name of Martin run a jeweler's store.
Those are all residents, all houses now. You wouldn't know there was any place to
live. There was a fire went through there and cleared it out. So then they built houses in there.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple other things. Well, before we leave that, were there any businesses down on the tracks at the freight sheds and any mills?
There was a planing mill right back of what is Lennox Rose House now.
Yes.
Well, at one time, it was a livery stable after the planing mill quit.
Mm-hmm.
Livery barn.
What about the freight sheds and what about the mill, the chopping mills? Were there...
That chopping mill celebrated, at least it could have celebrated, its 100 years of operation. About 2 years ago, I think in 1872, I'm pretty sure.
That it was built?
It was built. James Spindle built it.
Is that Bill Spindle's father?
Bill Spindle's father.
Mm-hmm. And the freight sheds, was there any business at the freight sheds, Fred? I mean, were grain buyers or...
There used to be two grain buyers, but they would have a representative up on the front street. And when the farmers were teaming their grain in, they'd bid against each other to help the farmer out.
Well, now, those were grain buyers. What about drovers?
Well, in those days, the drover went out to your farm and bought in bulk as a rule. The odd time they'd buy by pound. Everything was driven on foot into market.
Into Cookstown.
Yeah, the loading sheds. We're just north of the station, where the station was. And they used to ship there certain days of the week.
Did you ever hear the story that Andy Agnew was a drover, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear the story that he could neither read nor write?
That's correct.
Is that true? How did he do business?
Offhand.
And no problems. I mean, he could...
didn't seem to have.
And everything was paid in cash then in those days.
Oh, there was no checks issued then. We didn't even have a bank at the first one I first remember.
Now, just one
Andy,
other...
Andy was got some pretty tall stories, you know. He told about driving to Barry in an hour. Well, somebody kind of doubted that with a horse and buggy. It's ridiculous. He did in less than that. He did in 90 minutes.
One other thing. What about, was the school always where it sits now? Or at least not where it sits now, but the school is down by the station.
The school was up north of Jack Donald's house on King Street. There was a vacant lot up there for years.
Close to where the new school is now.
Pretty close to where the new school is now.
Yeah. We just omitted to mention one other thing, and that was to mention that the United Church was on the westerly end of King Street, just across from the parsonage. Now, is there anything else you could tell us about Cookstown that you can remember, that you'd like to make mention of?
Cookstown was a real metropolis in its time. There was nowhere else to go. Transportation was by horse, or by foot. And we used to have crowds there on a Saturday night where you couldn't get up and down the street without stepping off the sidewalk, meeting people. There were seven horse sheds, the three hotels, the three churches, and Monkman's store had a shed.
Just this is to put your horse in?
Put your horse. They'd be full, and then there'd be horses tied all along the streets.
Hmm. When did the village start to decline, sir? When did it go down?
After the motor come in.
That would be the beginning of the paving and use of 27 highways, yeah, as we know it now.
That's right.
When did that start, approximately, do you know?
Well, the first cars came just about the turn of the century. No, maybe 10 years later, maybe in about 1910. And the pity of it was that the cars came before the roads. But since the roads have got all paved, traffic always goes through to the larger center to do their business. And the upshot was that it starved our merchants out in the small places because they couldn't buy in volume the way the bigger places would.
Speaking of modern inventions changing the pattern of life, I read somewhere, sir, that you were responsible for bringing hydro into part of this area.
That I was?
Yes. I read something in the Barry Examiner not long ago that you had been instrumental in helping to bring hydro. This is when you were farming.
Well, of course, I put my name to the petition as far as that goes. But I wasn't any more responsible than the ordinary Joe as far as that goes.
Did you have to petition the hydro company to bring it into the area?
Yes, we had to. That is, to get a branch off the main line, we had to get up a petition and guarantee so many subscribers.
Can you remember when this came in? What year?
Oh, well, it was just after the 30s, mostly. It was times where everything kind of stood still through the 30s. But several of them had it in before that, but it became general after time began to pick up, you know, after the 30s.
Did you have any other ways of getting power for your own farm use prior to the hydro coming in?
Well, we used to use gasoline engines, you know.
Well, it was the Delco system, too. I mean, some farmers had the Delco system.
Yeah, but there were few and far between.
Did anyone ever use wind power at all?
Lots of them.
Now with this energy crisis, this is one of the things that people are looking to now.
Seems to me there's a lot of ways we could pick up a bit of energy if people were forced to.
Did you know anyone that used this wind power yourself?
I didn't use it myself, but we had them all spotted all around through the country.
Mr. Coleman, have you any more questions?
Yes, I would like to ask Fred two or three things here. Just when we're talking about old times, one was, did you ever see a smokehouse for smoking meat? Do you remember
I remember hearing and telling about doing, but I never actually saw a smokehouse. I used to see lots of ice houses, people stored enough ice to keep them all summer, so take care of their meat, you know, and so on.
Another thing of interest was the what we called barn builders, or like as I remember Harry Slate, they didn't call them a barn builder; they called them a barn framer.
Framer.
And tell us something about that, Fred. About how they would do that in your time.
Well, they would fix all the fringe and all the mortising and so on, and putting tenons on the ends of timber and so as it fit into the mortise and so on. Well, then they'd call, when they got everything framed, they would call in a bunch of neighbors, anywhere from 80 to 90, 100 neighbors. Well, they'd frame what they called a bent. That was a set of picnic for both women and men. They would push what they called the bent up into position, upright, with what they called pike poles. Well, there would be two bents from the thresh floor to the end, and two more from the thresh floor to the other end. When they got them all up, they had what they called plates to put up on top to carry the roof, you see. And they used to call up sides. And that was an exciting time when they started to put on the plates and then the rafters for who could.
And did the ladies come and provide the food?
Well, no, you had to provide your own food, whoever the building was being.
Whoever was building the barn?
Yes, but it was only neighborly to call in the neighbor women.
To help?
To help.
How long did it take you?
Well,
To raise the barn?
Once they got the bents all framed, it wouldn't take more than maybe half an hour.
Oh. So in a day's time, you'd have the frame of your barn
already boarded up. Yeah.
You know, there's where modern technology hasn't won at all, because it takes far longer now.
Well, of course, they only have two or three men and do it all by ropes and so on.
But you've lost the time, and you've lost the sociability and the companionship and the friendship. Yes.
I was just going to come to that in the form of entertainment, Fred, if you could tell us what did you do for entertainment. Now, I've heard of box socials and euchres and this sort of thing, but what did you actually do as you remember?
Each of the churches through the winter would put on what they called a parlor social. All the people of the church would go to John Graham's or Tom Fleming or somewhere else, you see, as their turn came. And they didn't play cards in those days.
Why not?
Cards were taboo.
Oh,
I don't know. They used to play and dance around the piano, you know, and people amuse themselves. Their amusement wasn't provided for them the way it is on a television.
Well, when you say a parlor social, is a box social the same thing?
Same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
What about the drinking of alcohol in those days?
It was taboo.
There was no. You could only get it at the hotel, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that was the only place. There would be the odd still, I guess, though, around.
Well, that worked.
Nobody bothered much about it.
Would alcohol be served after the barn raising?
No. No, sir.
Now, one other thing, Fred, before we leave Cookstown, can you remember, or would you want to remember some distinguished persons that have come from this area?
Well, this was quite a civic and public-minded community around Cookstown. To start with, as I told you, Major Cook was warden one time. In the early days, away before my time, a guest was Thomas Ferguson, was Member of Parliament. He lived up here, mm-hmm. I think, somewhere near the fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We had a member of, at least the Minister of Agriculture, John S. Duff, just lived up on the fringe of Cookstown. We had Colonel R.T. Banting.
Okay.
He was county treasurer. He still lived here. He was also treasurer of his own municipality.
I thought he was county clerk.
Am I a treasurer again? It's county clerk he was. And he was also clerk of Township of Essa. But in those days, we had great train service through here. Two trains going north in the forenoon, and same two going south in the afternoon, evening. Colonel Banning would board the train here at 8 o'clock in the morning, go up to the county buildings all day, didn't carry a satchel, carried a little basket. And he kept that up for years. See, I don't know how many years he was county clerk. Well, then I mentioned about Ferguson.
Well, there were some of the Moors. Now, weren't they fairly prominent people? Wasn't there a Moor that wrote a book? Or no, not a Moor.
Well, you're thinking of Nina Moore.
That's right.
You see, Jim Moore was Reeve of Alliston.
Yes.
And he was county auditor at one time.
Yes.
And his daughter, Nina Moore,
yes,
got into the social service of the provincial government. But that's a different story. I'm talking about Cookstown.
Well, you've had also... you mentioned before Tom King is
kind of a historian. He went out west, of course, and died out there. He's a man over 90. But we had a man by the name of Harry Coleman, and between he and his son, they were treasurer of the county of Simcoe for upwards of 50 years. We had Bert Coleman and his wife celebrated 100 years last August the 3rd, 100 years service in the one family from Henry Coleman in the early days. His son Frank took on, and then Bert was the grandson. He's still there.
Yes, that's quite an honor and quite a record, Fred. As a matter of fact, I understand there's only one other case in Canada similar to this in Cookstown, where one direct generations have carried on. Now, I think we'd like to first also put on this tape your activities as far as council work and your activities in the community. When were you ever on the school board?
I was on the school board for 13 years, the local school board.
And then you followed the school board and went into the council?
Councilor.
How many years were you councillor?
About 16, I guess, but that is all the way through from the time I started, I quit.
How many years were you Reeve?
I was 2 years deputy Reeve, 4 years Reeve.
4 years Reeve.
Yeah.
And could have been warden if you'd had tried for it, I know. But you've been honored anyway by the Ex-Wardens Association and being made an honorary member of the Ex-Warden, Simcoe County Ex-Warden.
Something I'm proud of.
Yes, I'm one of those too, and it's a very nice
thing. I think perhaps, Jack, that I established a bit of a record that the last warden was elected. According to my arithmetic, that's 47 wardens I've seen elected without a break.
That's a real record.
I think so.
I have seen 40, but there was a break. Two I didn't attend.
I don't think I've had a break since.
Did you have any other activities in the community other than the council and the school board?
Oh, no.
Were you president of the Cookstown Fair? Or?
For a time. But I was only a very humble dirt farmer.
Well, a very distinguished person in Cookstown area, anyway, Fred, and still so, because, you know, we always like to see you up at the county buildings and the ex-wardens associations and meetings. Now, I think Peter here would like to talk to you about current events, and I'm going to turn it back to Peter, and then we can, this will be the conclusion of the program. And before I finish, I'd just like to say, Fred, I'm very pleased to be here, and I appreciate being here to be with you, I mean, in this interview. And it's been very delightful for me, and I've learned a lot about Cookstown that I didn't know.
Well, I appreciate that, Jack, and it's just been a pleasure for me. Information that you didn't know.
Mr. Epperly, to meet someone of your memory and intelligence that has lived the life that you have, that you've seen the things from the Wright brothers' flight to space flight, and can remember them all.
Yes.
This is most amazing. Can you think of all these things that you can remember over your period that struck you as the most memorable, the thing that you'll never forget out of one? I know that's terribly hard to do.
Well, there's so much, Peter. You know, when you look back, it's pretty hard to realize there can be such changes in one person's lifetime.
This is when is there a change? One single change that seemed to be the most memorable and important to you?
I guess perhaps transportation is, you see, I can remember a neighbor drawing hay past our school with a pair of oxen. And then to see those great trucks today, and see the huge traffic in heavy transportation, you know, it's almost unbelievable.
That's the greatest. That is in line with what other people have told me, that transportation is the biggest change that they can remember in their career.
Just offhand, I can't think of any just special occasion. That I think is the biggest change.
Generally speaking, as I said before, the energy crisis, the problems we're having, pollution, so on and so forth, in a way caused by transportation, cars and everything.
You know, I don't go along with that altogether. It's just as high up as ever was. We used to have heavy freight trains coming up this, and it's all upgrade. And they'd be spewing out that stinking gas, you know. We lived, our buildings were perhaps 90 rods or so from the railroad. It would nearly smother you. But still, that went away. It was dispersed in the air and absorbed in the air. And I think that just perhaps not as much pollution. We don't notice the gas, perhaps. But I think a lot of this pollution is overdone.
Someone's brought that up about, you mentioned all the horses that would be in town.
Yeah.
Now there's a source of pollution in a sense.
It was all pollution. With every farmer, it was a common thing for a farmer to haul out some dead stock in the wintertime in those early days. They were never buried. The stench of that to the wind is in the right direction, you know. Smell the neighbors, smell your own. And of course they're gobbled up by crows and so on, foxes. But it was all pollution. Every age has its form of pollution.
Of course, every house was heated by wood.
Heated by wood.
And your smoke from your house.
That's right.
Nowadays, you know, no coal, no wood.
You go back, I suppose, London is one of the earliest, oldest towns that we know. And look at that fog, just as it's really a smog, and they've lived with that. The pollution must be there for years and years. You don't hear any more about them than you do about our own local
Another thing that I was going to ask you about was the change in Cookstown. I drive through here quite often, and I comment on the number of antique stores.
Yes.
Do you ever think, oh, if I'd only put such and such away instead of...
I've often thought of it. I left enough stuff on the farm to make a nice little sale. What's no use saving the darn thing? It's just let go.
Do you think it's just a fad, or will it carry on, this old glass and nails and horseshoes?
I wouldn't like to make a guess.
In line with that, that's changed Cookstown, but you can see subdivisions out here that are growing. Do you think it'll ever come back to be anything like the place it was with stores?
Well, ever's a long time. You know, the place is growing and growing and growing, and Toronto's still moving out this way. At the present time, Cookstown has only one industry. That's Hector Smith's
planing mill
and hardware, at least.
Lumber mill
and requirements for building.
Building supplies.
What I mean is that we're just simply a bedroom for Toronto and Camp Borden and other places around.
So it will never be the center of commerce at all like it was?
I don't. We have no sewers, and we've nothing to bring industry here. It seems too bad. It's situated right on the highways, and we have no shortage of water here, but that's the way it is.
Thank you very much, Mr. Appley. I really appreciated this chance to talk to you.
Well, it's been nice.
I just want to ask you one more question, and I mean you're wise, and you'll have an answer, no doubt. I have my thoughts on this, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. If you were a member of County Council today, what do you think, how do you think you could improve the government, the County Council government?
Of course, I'd be prejudiced there. That system that we have now, I believe, wasn't it the Baldwin Act that formulated that way back in about 1849, I believe? It was simple, it was cheap, and if the people right on the job that knew all the answers, and I can't see how they can improve on it.
Do you think they have too many members?
No, I don't. I think our county council is just 3 or 4 members weaker than it was before. We have a representative here and another one spotted all over. They don't cost too much. They don't check their salaries too high. And every ratepayer has access to someone.
You think that government closer to the people is still the best government?
Oh, I can't see anything else.
And by the people and for the people.
By the people and for the people.
Thanks very much.
Now it's by the people and, at least it's by the bureaucrats.
For the bureaucrats. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Put the straw on the carriers?
Oh, yes. Many's the time I stood the carrier and looked the straw back.
You know, Helen, your dad was talking about Saturday night and Goodson. Well, you and I can remember that. Because I can remember when we'd come in, I'd be out at Bob's.
Yeah.
Come into town. You see, the store's never closed till 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock Saturday night. Well, there was no entertainment other than for the young people, other than to walk up and down the street. Or going up to Brawley's and have a dish of ice cream.
Yeah,
or
an ice cream barrel.
Yeah, an ice cream barrel. You know,
go and meet the up train at night, and then come up to Henry Coleman's and get the mail. He'd have the mail open at 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
He would?
Yeah. And in a
Well, that wasn't in our time.
And a nicey time, in the winter time. I've heard the blacksmiths shoeing horses at 12 o'clock at night, on Saturday night.
The sound would carry that far.
There was too many people, and
you had to keep your turn.
Yeah. And if he complains that this coming in this hour of the night, don't you want our business?
You know who I was talking to this morning? And you remember. I don't know whether Helen remembers. But Tom McBride used to live up on the 11th of Essex.
I know where he lives.
And Neil phoned me this morning.
Neil is his son.
Neil is his son.
And the girl is Stella.
Do you know how old she is?
She's about as old as I am.
No, she's 70.
Is that all?
And she's been a deaconess or whatever with the United Church for 42 years. And her pension, he tells me, is $33.50 a month. And they're trying to get her in a home. So, well, I said, they've been trying different places, to put her in a home. And I said, oh, well.